If you drive on metro area highways, be warned. You're on camera and watched by the Department of Transportation, the State Patrol, and several news organizations. More than 250 cameras perched high atop utility poles provide continuous live images covering 80% of Minneapolis-St. Paul highways.
115 Metro,
is the DOT's traffic control center in Minneapolis. It's a darkened room that glows with the light of numerous television monitors lining the walls from floor to ceiling. Dispatchers such as Teresa Collies watch these monitors for anything that might slow traffic.
Did you know about the stall 36 eastbound at Dale on camera 4? Okay, bye.
This traffic control center is one example where, in theory, the public gains a safer commute in exchange for giving up a little privacy. Dispatchers not only alert the State Patrol to problems, they also call emergency vehicles and the highway helper to assist stranded motorists. The DOT is quick to point out that the images are not saved and the cameras do not provide images of drivers' faces. But the DOT has tested a camera that can capture still pictures of drivers. Called Photocop, it's used in many European countries as a way to nab speeders. The cameras snap pictures of violators who then are mailed a ticket. MnDOT would like to use Photocop as a way to catch and deter drivers who run red lights and skirt around railroad barricades. MnDOT's Bob Weinholzer says the camera only trips if a car enters the intersection on a red light.
It's not people that are just absentmindedly at the last second. It's turned yellow, they didn't see it, they thought, well, I better keep going, and it turned red just as they entered it. We're talking about large numbers of people that are back 15, 20, 30 seconds after it's already been read.
Legislation allowing a two-year test of Photocop in Minneapolis failed to gain support last session because no one could agree whether the camera should capture only a motorist's license plate or the entire front of a car, which would show the driver and any passengers in the front seat. One privacy rights scholar, George Washington University professor Amitai Etzioni, says the public's fear of the government as Big Brother is misplaced. He believes the public has more to fear from corporations that profit from selling personal information.
We are so convinced that government is the danger that we kept watching the front door while all these other people jumped in from the back window.
Etzioni argues that giving up some personal information in exchange for a safer society can be good. One example, he says, is high-powered computer encryption, which disguises the content of computer messages by converting them into codes the government cannot currently break. Etzioni says the government should have the key to decoding those messages to protect the public.
When the guy who blew up the World Trade Center was caught, it turned out that he had prepared another attack, either going to blow up the United Nations or one of the tunnels leading to Manhattan while it was full of these cars and people. They detected this plan, they encrypted in his computer, in a disk. Here we're talking about terrorists, we're talking about pedophiles, we're talking about drug lords. We should, under court order, only under court order, allow the government to de-encrypt those messages.
The head of the state's Information Policy Analysis Division says advancing computer technology is at the root of privacy rights conflicts. Don Gemberling says as long as technology advances, the courts will have to decide where to draw the privacy line.
Much of the modern discussion about privacy is in some ways not so much about quote-unquote privacy, because nobody really agrees what that means. But it's more what's happening with personal information collected, maintained about us, how it's used, all those kinds of things. And what's happening because of computers just wasn't physically capable of happening years ago.
The courts have shifted the boundaries of privacy versus public good year to year, case to case. Just this past year, the Minnesota Supreme Court reversed itself on a high-profile privacy case. The court followed a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that said short-term guests do not have the same protections against unreasonable police searches as residents. William Mitchell Law Professor Ken Kerwin says one general rule the courts follow is whether the government's conduct invades a person's expectation of privacy.
And you'd have the same thing with the cameras on the freeway situation. Does that invade a legitimate expectation of privacy? The court would probably tend to say no, in that if you're out in the public, you know that members of the public are able to observe you, and really the camera isn't doing anything other than what members of the public are already able to do.
But tangled in this web is one person's right to privacy from another person. In 1998, the Minnesota Supreme Court reversed a long-standing tradition and recognized this right. It ruled that two college students could sue a Moorhead area Walmart for invasion of privacy because a Walmart employee posted a nude photo of them. Chief Justice Kathleen Blatz wrote for the majority that the right to privacy is an integral part of humanity. The heart of the nation's liberty is choosing which parts of our lives shall go public and which parts to hold close. I'm Elizabeth Stawicki, Minnesota Public Radio.